Today's July 23rd, 2017. This is Mobile View Podcast number 214. And I'm actually recording because I changed my microphone. So I've been using a nice blue snowball microphone for the last couple of years. This one, it's a giant, big, huge, round thing, sphere. And the base is so large, I have problems fitting it in front of me on the table and getting to the keyboard of my MacBook while John and I record these podcasts. So also, it doesn't have a mute button and a couple of other things. So during Amazon Prime Day, I took advantage of the Prime Day sale and I bought a same brand, blue, but it's the Blue Yeti mic, which is more suitable for podcasting. I think it has a mute button. I think I can see. Yep. And some other things. There's a couple of funny oddball things about both microphones, though, that I wanted to mention. And it's because microphone technology doesn't appear to need to change very often. I mean, you know, if you find a good mic, you can use it for many, many, many years. There's nothing wrong with the snowball I have. I just thought it'd be more convenient to have a mic that didn't take up so much desk space. And it's a little bit taller, which is nice. So I don't have to kind of scrunch down or put it in a phone book to get it up near my mouth. But in any case, the blue snowball mic I've used the old USB Type-B square connector. So, you know, the Type-A is the kind you see on most PCs, which is the rectangular big connector that most of us are familiar with. Or, you know, if you have a wired mouse, probably uses one, for example. The mini USB connector, you might not remember. So it was a smaller rectangular thing. Some phones used to have it. Some PDAs used to have it, if you remember what a PDA is. John's laughing because he does remember what a PDA is.
Oh, yes.
But you really don't see it much in places, right? So
I don't see it much. And this week I was charging up an old PDA, and it was a pain to find one of those because I don't have them as plentiful as I have USB micro connectors.
Right. So, anyway, so, you know, both mics, and this is a brand new mic that I bought from Amazon. It was in a shrink wrap box and everything. It has a micro USB. Now, it's got some other quirks that John and, I shouldn't say John is trying to work out. I'm trying to work out. So I was hearing John through my headphones, and now I'm hearing him through the MacBook speakers. So I'm not sure what's going on there. It was working okay. I'm kind of plugging in. Hey, John, can you say something?
I can say a lot of things. Some of them are appropriate for this podcast, and some of them...
Can you still hear me?
I can still hear you just fine. You can still hear
me. Okay, I'm going to plug my headphones back into the MacBook. So earlier, what was happening is we found out I had to plug my headphones into the microphone headphone jack to hear Mike, but apparently now I don't.
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Okay, so as long as you can hear me.
Yep, I can hear John just fine. So anyway, so that's my microphone adventure. It's the, like I said, the Blue Yeti mic. I like it as a physical device, although it seems a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for, flaky, more nuanced. How's that? That's a nice word. More nuanced in its configuration and use. I'm not sure why I couldn't hear John through my headphone jack earlier and had to plug into the mic. I'm not sure why I decided to stop sending me John's audio to my headphone jack via the microphone. I'm plugged back into the MacBook, which is fine. But we'll see how this sounds. John said I was coming in a little loud or louder than usual. So
that could just be you, though. Yeah. You might just be more boombastic today than usual.
Okay, speaking of boombastic, so Google search app for both Android and iOS apparently supposed to get a Google News feed in it. I'm not exactly sure what that means because I've always gotten news in the Google search app for both Android and iOS. At least I think I do. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. At least on iOS. I know I use it on iOS because I'll launch the search app just to get the news, actually, because it, you know, it looks at what I'm looking around the web for and shows me things I think might be interesting that I might not normally look for. So, or, you know, at least let me know. But I haven't seen it on either my Android or iOS devices yet, so I assume the rollout is phased or whatever. I don't know. John, do you use the Google search app at all on your iOS
devices?
The only
reason I have it on my iOS device is for Google sign-in, two-factor authentication attempts, so you don't have to use the code. You can just authorize it through the app. But I really haven't used it more than that. I do open it occasionally, but it's not my primary news source these days. So.
Okay. All right. Well, and speaking of Google News, you know, a couple of weeks ago, at least in my, you know, if you go to news.google.com on your desktop web browser, I use Google News a lot to, you know, search for, I have certain keywords set, like open source or Apple to let me, or Google, you know, to let me know when those topics pop up in the news. And also, you know, general news, national news, world news, that sort of thing. And it's been fine for many years, but Google, in their infinite wisdom, decided that the user interface needed to change. Mm-hmm. And they did. And like a lot of things over the last couple of years, they decided that lots of white space is what was needed in the Google News feed. I contend that the new Google News UI is horrible. There's too much white space. Here's the thing about the way I used to use RSS readers, for example. And when those kind of went away, I now use Google News. I like to scan them fast, which means I like to see as much text density as possible on a single screen before I have to scroll. Because that means I can read through summaries quicker and perhaps spot something that's interesting. But anyway, I don't know, John, do you use Google News, news.google.com at all?
No, actually, I've been using so a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, actually, I started subscribing to the New York Times because they had a really nice rate for people with a .edu address. Who would have thought that they're trying to get liberals to read the New York Times, which I don't identify as one, but I do like their depth of reporting and all of that. So I've been using mostly that and Apple News for the last few months. Apple News tends to get me what I want, so I really don't use Google News all that often.
Really? I don't use Apple News all that often, even though it's, you know, sitting there off to the virtual left side of my screen. All right. So really, it's been kind of a slow news week. I've been trying to think of what else has happened aside from getting a new microphone. I got a $12 case for my iPad. That finally came in.
And how's that working?
It actually works pretty good. So I think the smart cover from Apple for the iPad Pro 10.5 is like $40 or $50. And it's just a cover. Now, it is a magnetic cover that, you know, sleeps the screen when you fold it and unsleeps it, or, you know, resumes it when you take off when you fold the cover back. And guess what? The $12 cover does the same thing. Yep, John is showing his. The $12 cover does the exact same thing, sleeps and, you know, resumes, and it covers the back of the device. So it's a full cover versus just a screen cover.
Well, I do agree that I don't understand why Apple doesn't offer the back case cover like they had the smart case for so many years. So on my 10.5 inch iPad Pro, and for those of you that are saying shut up about the iPad Pros already, we're not doing another iPad podcast today, but I've been using, I think it was $7.99 on Amazon for the back case that I have on mine. I've been quite happy with it. So
Now I will say that although Apple doesn't have a smart case for the iPad Pro or iPad Air anymore, I guess they don't have one for an iPad Mini 4 either, but they, on their Apple.com store, where they feature, you know, a number of non-Apple gear, they do have a really nice semi-armored case with iPad Mini 4 that I picked up for my daughter. I'll grab a picture of it sometime and maybe post it. But it's this really nice case. I think it was $50. And, you know, it sleeps and unsleeps the device, and it provides not just a cover, but really not quite OtterBox level protection, but I think pretty close.
So speaking of Apple products, one thing we didn't note in our news rundown, it's a very quick one. There is an iOS security update that did drop this week that patches a rather nasty bug in Wi-Fi. So if you haven't updated your devices, go ahead and go to General and then System Update and grab 10.3.3 or something like that. But you'll want to grab it before you go out in the wild, in the rare chance that someone next to you is running some nefarious sort of thing that could run software on your device. One thing that is kind of nice, now that I'm down to just one iPad and one iPhone, it was only two things I had to update. I've been used to, for many years, having to update three iPads and an iPhone. It's amazing how when you downsize, you don't have to do that as often.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like a very big update. I have not applied to update, so thanks for the reminder, John. Mm-hmm. I'm looking on my iPhone 7 Plus, and the update for it, and you know, remember that the, I'm not talking to John, but you know, the fives of people that listen to us, the updates for the various iOS devices vary in size depending on the device. And this one for the iPhone 7 Plus is 137.6 megabytes, so it's not a very big update.
Yeah, I think my wife's for the iPad Air 2 was around 79 megabytes, so even smaller than that. Mm-hmm.
Hey, did the mute button work while I coughed?
Yeah, it did. I didn't hear it too much. Okay. Well, maybe I heard it a little bit. Maybe
okay, I'm not sure. Because the mute button lit up and I tried to mute myself, but like I said, this is a flakier device than I expected.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I had bought that same device about 6 months ago to a year ago.
Yeah.
And got an older version of it that didn't even work with macOS.
Oh.
Sierra.
So that's right, you mentioned that.
If yours is working with Sierra, then at least you have the newer device.
Yeah, apparently. Hopefully. Well, you know, it's not working as well as the Snowball in terms of plug and go. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been having to unplug and plug things and twiddle with knobs, and basically the Snowball doesn't have knobs, so I'm glad I didn't get rid of my Snowball. It's still sitting around waiting to come back into action.
All right. Well, I thought today, since we didn't have a lot of news, it might be interesting to talk about what the best tool is for different things you and I do.
Oh, okay.
It struck me. So yesterday I was sitting out on a beach about an hour away from home at a place called Grenada Lake in Mississippi. Uh-huh. And I was reading part of the novel that I'm reading right now on my Kindle.
Okay.
Which is not where I normally read this novel. I've been reading the Game of Thrones series of novels. I'm on the third one right now, and I've been reading the iBooks, enhanced versions of them, because they've got you know, little maps, and you can tap on people's names and remind you who they are and what their lineage is and all that stuff. But for the beach, I'm not going to use my iPad, so I was using my Kindle. And it got me thinking, what is the best tool for certain things? So I've got a series of tasks, Todd, and I want you to tell me what you think the best tool out of your options would be for it.
Okay, I'm ready.
So first of all, reading a novel. What about that, Kindle or iPad?
Kindle or iPad. Actually, I don't read with my eyeballs anymore. I only read audiobooks. So actually, it's my iPhone using the Audible tool.
Well, you bring up a good point. Your eyeballs probably, if you were doing a lot of reading, would find the e-ink a little bit better than the iPad screen.
Absolutely.
For... you know, but the iPad screen does have its merits. So my next question was, what about reading the news? What's the best device for you for that? iPad, notebook, iPhone?
I think it depends where I am. If I am wandering around, in other words, I'm standing in line at, you know, some place and just waiting for stuff to happen, or waiting for an elevator, I'll pop out the iPhone and do a quick check of the news. If I'm sitting down, it's more likely to be the iPad, though.
It is interesting to me how some of these are dependent on where you are and what you're doing for the best tool, and that they don't have such a strong desire for you to use a certain tool that they don't stop you from doing it wherever you're at.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, I could totally see reading the news going, well, if I really want to read the news, I'm not going to bother with it on my phone. I'll just wait till I get back to my iPad or wait till I get back to my desktop, which is one of the things that I thought was interesting is coming up with this, and that's why I have a slight little rant at the end of this whole exercise. Texting. So this sounds like a weird one because we all think of texting as a phone-based activity, but recently I was talking with some friends about the different texting platforms, iMessage versus WhatsApp versus Google, or Google, I don't even care about them anymore because I don't even know what their texting app is anymore. But Facebook Messenger, et cetera. So given your choice of device, what is the best device for you for texting?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Why don't you tell me what the best device for you while I think about this?
If I have someone that's on all of the platforms, I would definitely say something with a full keyboard. So either my iPad Pro or my MacBook But if that's not a possibility, I'm kind of stuck with the phone. But basically, if I have any other option, texting is better on a full keyboard than it is on my phone.
Yeah, I agree with that. And so for me, basically, Google Voice, which I still use for a lot of texting, is the best platform for physical convenience. That said, it's becoming a little flaky. And sometimes I've noticed, for example, it won't send the message quickly, or I won't receive something quickly, as you know, other texting type applications and protocols. So it, you know, sometimes my family uses iMessage on iOS mm-hmm. devices to send stuff in general. And then there's a hodgepodge where other people send me on Google Voice or an iPhone. It kind of depends what number I gave out that day, you know, many years ago. So it's really a mix, but if I could have a modern fixed Google Voice, I would prefer to use it for texting. But unfortunately, that's not possible, and more importantly, it's not possible on my Google Fi Android phone, because once you move to Google Fi, you can't use Google Voice, and so I had to create a second separate account just to buy my Google Voice service. My Google Fi service, and which cannot use Google Voice.
Yeah, well, not one of the best moves that Google's ever made.
No. Let's call it what it is. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Right? So the only device I can't use Google Voice on is a Google Android phone.
Yeah, that's a great thing, Google. You're doing a great job. Okay, so you look at your inbox, and you've got 200 new messages that you need to triage. Yeah. What's your best device for email triage?
Oh, boy. Email triage. I would say my desktop.
Okay.
Yeah.
For me anymore, it's the phone. Using Outlook on my iOS device, just swipe, 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 get rid of. I actually do enjoy the focused inbox feature in Outlook. I know a lot of people are not fans of that.
Yeah.
But it actually does a really good job for me of separating out what I need to look at right now versus what I can look at later. And I think that's where some of our friends get it wrong. I think they sort of see focused inbox as here's what's important and here's what's not. And that's definitely how Google sort of puts theirs with Gmail. And I've never really liked Gmail's way of having to actually go through multiple taps to get to my other inbox areas. But with Outlook on iOS, I can just tap over to other, see everything there. And it really is the distinction not between what's important and what's not, but what do I need to act on today and what can I act on later or just file for later use. So
yeah, so as you know, as our fives of listeners might recall, let's see, when was it? Last year? Earlier this year? I can't remember. I think it was earlier this year. I migrated my ogasawalrus.com domain. Is that true? Do I want to say it that way? Yeah, I guess so. So I dumped the ISP I had been using for ogasawalrus.com for both the website and email services for many years, and moved over to a combination of Google domains to maintain the web presence, not the web presence, but the web identity, and Outlook. I pay Outlook.com premium to handle the email, so I had to migrate that, you know, do the MX record change and all that, and moved email over to Outlook.com. It's not my primary email, although some people still use it. Again, it's kind of like texting. Depends when I gave out the email to people. Mm-hmm. So I really don't use Outlook.com that much. You know, I only check it maybe a couple times a week to clean it out, like you just described, and it's pretty good for that. My main email is still my Gmail account, where some other email accounts also point to. I forwarded to that. The problem with Gmail on a mobile device is that for email that comes to the @gmail.com address, you cannot delete it unless you are also deleting email from a non-gmail.com domain, like, you know, let's say foobar.com. If you have like a single or one or two or three email sent to your gmail.com address and you try to delete them, the only option is to archive them, which, I don't know, that doesn't sit well with me. I know there's not a lot of difference between archiving and deleting, but I like to delete them. You know, like, I don't need, this is junk mail, you know, that kind of thing. So,
see, that's a problem I would never even known about, because I almost never delete anything.
Oh.
I'm going to archive it all because who knows when I will need it in the future. And sometimes that has helped me quite a bit with junk mail things. I remember a few years ago I went to buy something. I thought, you know, are there any coupons for this website? I only buy something from them every 3 or 4 years. And I did a search, and sure enough, one of my rules had caught and moved out of my inbox their latest piece of spam, and it had a coupon in it for like 20% off or something. Yeah. So that was my reason to keep doing this, that $5 I saved at one point years ago.
You know, my combination of Gmail plus some email accounts that are not going to the Outlook.com premium. So I have, I don't know, 3 or 4 email accounts all tied into Gmail. And so a lot of the emails are the kinds you suggest. They're not junk mail in the sense of something I don't want to see at all, or that are, you know, potential malware or phishing kinds of things. But, you know, just email I really don't care about most of the time, like a coupon or something like that. So that said, I am looking at my iOS. iOS is telling me I have 30,576 unread emails.
Oh, jeez. Now that, I don't delete anything, but that would drive me absolutely crazy.
It's a nice Apple round mail, number, 30,000.
If I look at Apple Mail right now, I have one unread message, and it's a YouTube notification that went straight into archive.
Yeah.
So. And in my junk mail, I have 5 items right now, and I just looked at them and deleted them all.
Sigh. Well, 30,000 is a nice round number, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay. I can never do that. I'm an inbox zero kind of person.
Okay, now I have a question for you.
Yes.
What about note-taking? I know we're both fans of Evernote, but is that what you mainly use, or are you starting to switch away?
So I'm showing Todd right now that taking notes was the exact next thing on my list.
Oh, okay.
But that's good. You're thinking like me now.
Yeah, I'm getting smart.
Yeah. So what are you using for note taking right now?
I use a combination of things. I use Evernote for lots and lots and lots of personal things. You know, just like keeping track of stuff.
I use Evernote mostly now as like a repository.
Yeah.
It's fairly rare that I actually open Evernote and start a new note.
Oh,
most of the time, I'm clipping things, or I've got some notes I update in there. But for new notes, for me right now, it's a combination between Microsoft OneNote and an app that I've used forever, but I kind of go back and forth between, called Note Shelf on iOS.
Oh, you mentioned that. Yeah, you mentioned
that. So all three of them back up to somewhere that I can save them. You know, OneNote you can export out of, and you can also copy out of. Evernote you can export easily. Note Shelf backs up to Evernote, so I'm fine with that. But yeah, I still think note taking, and a good chunk of my notes are still paper. I at the office, this is the time of year when people are going, well, what do you need office supply wise? And Post-it notes. I use Post-its like crazy at the office. So that's where I'm at. I'm between Post-it notes and Note Shelf and Evernote and OneNote.
So for me, as I mentioned, a lot of my personal stuff goes into Evernote. Some stuff goes into Google Keep, which is not as feature-rich as Evernote in many ways. And maybe that's why I like to use it, because sometimes Evernote has some syncing issues, syncing into cloud. Sometimes it's a back-end problem. Sometimes it's I don't know what. But, you know, it's like more – it's like there's a 1% problem. Once out of every 100 times there seems to be a syncing problem. In fact, you and I stopped using it because we could never get it to do conflict resolution properly.
We didn't even mention that the tool we're using for notes for this podcast is none of the ones we've mentioned so far.
Yeah, it's Google Docs. Google Docs is great, by the way.
We've been using them now for quite a long time.
Yeah,
to see what the last – we switched to them podcast – oh, geez, he just has to load up here. September 2nd, 2014 with around podcast 94.
Yeah, so we've been using it almost 3 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, with really no hiccups. Now it's going to crash. Now that I've said
exactly.
That. Right? If you believe in jinxes.
Yeah.
But like you, I also use Microsoft OneNote. I tend to use it exclusively for work, and that's because I can create Outlook groups. with an Outlook group OneNote notebook attached to it. And so I can share it amongst, you know, coworkers and things and say, hey, you know, here are my notes on this whatever, meeting or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you need to see it, just go look.
Yeah.
You know, it's you can see it, nobody else can see it. Or, you know, you five people can see it, nobody else can see it kind of thing.
Yep.
So it works good for that. I still have not adopted the Outlook metaphor. There are a lot of things about it that still drive me bonky, but it is good enough for at least sharing. And it's, you know, the officially supported tool by the group. So, you know, I use it. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll have to at some point talk. Are you guys on Office 365 or are you still on hosted?
No, we're on Office 365. We're totally cloud.
Yeah. We went to that recently at my university. We're on 365. And there's some interesting new integrations that I think at some point maybe we'll have to do a podcast on.
Yeah. You know, the one of the weird things, and it might affect you, is there are different Office 365s. You know, there's a personal yep. one that people buy as individuals for their home and family. There is Office 365 Enterprise for large businesses, you know, enterprise license. There is probably Office 365 for educational accounts, and there's Office 365 for government accounts, which is what I have, mm-hmm. and presumably you have the educational account. And guess who doesn't get all the new features?
you and I both.
That's right.
The educational account doesn't have Microsoft To Do,
yep.
Which Same is here. Their latest task manager. Yeah, so I empathize with you.
Yeah, so Office 365... 365 doesn't always equal 365. Sometimes it's 364.
Mm-hmm.
Like for John and me, which is...
Or 363.
Or 363 or 360. You know, it's hard to tell sometimes. But stuff is missing. Or stuff are missing. Stuff be missing. I'm not sure what the correct verb is. But anyway, stuff are missing. Features are missing. How's that? That's more probably correct grammar. But in any case, a little bit frustrating sometimes because I really would like to try Microsoft. Well, actually, that's not true. Let me back up on that. Since Microsoft To Do is available in my $69 a year personal Office 365 account. I did try it and I didn't like it. I remember that now. It didn't let me like prioritize things and do subtasks. And oh, my neighbor's dog doesn't sound too happy. But,
I was wondering about that. I was hoping I wasn't the rabbit.
No. The rabbits don't bark like that.
Well.
Or it could be they've developed a new skill, and
yeah.
We are now listening to their new impression of a dog barking.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I like the dog, and hopefully the dog is barking at something that's not a danger, that's chasing a danger away from my area.
We can hope. Okay, next thing on my list, reading PDF documents.
Reading PDF, okay.
Tablet or laptop? I'm assuming you're not a masochist, so you probably are not into reading it on your phone.
In a pinch, I will, if you know, I'm running around and that's all I got. But generally speaking, I have a Surface Pro 4 like you, and I have two external monitors. I think they're 21-inch. They're not big monitors, like 21, 24-inch monitors. And I have one turned in portrait mode.
Okay.
And so my preference is to use the Surface Pro 4, but not on its screen, but on the 21-inch portrait mode screen set to, you know, full width. So I can see left to right completely. And generally, I can get the whole page, right? In a pretty big font for my aging eyes. And so that's my preferred way to read.
Yeah, I have the two monitors set up as well, but I don't put one in portrait. So for me, I like using my iPad Pro to read PDFs if I can, although I can do it on the dual monitors pretty easily. All right. One last thing.
Okay.
This is the challenge of the whole thing. If you were to go on a trip.
Okay, we're back. I think it's created a new file. So what happened is I had to pause. My neighbor dropped by to let me know a couple of
interrupt
things,
your podcast.
And I paused the recording, and it's now, so the old Audio Hijack Pro 2X had a pause button. It looks like the new, better, improved Audio Hijack 3 that I was forced to buy, because 2 doesn't support it on the new Mac OS, Sierra, doesn't have a pause button. You stop, you don't stop. So I'll have to just basically splice the files together, a little bit irritated, but, you know, it's a first world problem. Life could be a lot more difficult, and I'm not complaining. I'm just pointing an observation on a new tool that is, quite frankly, not as good as the old one in many ways. But anyway.
All right. Well, here is my last what's the best tool. Imagine you are traveling, and we've talked about differences in what you and I pack travel-wise in the past. But here is the ultimate. You are going to be traveling for an extended period of time, maybe, you know, a week or two, maybe even a month.
Right.
And you get one electronic device.
Ooh.
Now, I'll give you that all of your electronic devices could function as a phone. They could all make phone calls. We'll say they all have GSM or CDMA radios in them.
Right.
But what would it be? Would it be a laptop, a tablet, or an iPhone?
It'd have to be a phone. I mean, just to stay in communication with folks. I don't know. How about you, John?
You know, I think it would have to be a phone as well, even though... But the nice thing is, as I was thinking about it, most of what I do on a daily basis, I could... It wouldn't be pretty, but I could get away with it on my phone. At the very least, I could be emailing people things that I would normally put into Excel spreadsheets or something like that. I could download Excel and use it on my phone if I had to.
You could carry a Bluetooth keyboard for extended writing.
Yeah, I carry a Bluetooth keyboard. But here's my rant that kind of goes at the end of this. You can tell me what you think of this.
Okay.
I've noticed that there are kind of two sorts of people when it comes to their phone.
Uh-oh.
There are people who they have a job or they have hobbies or whatever that require them to be mostly connected, and thus they kind of set up their phones in a very optimized way. They can accomplish a lot of things on their phone.
Okay.
They could be on their phone all the time. And so for them, the phone is a tool that goes along with their career and their hobbies and their life. Whereas for others, the phone is sort of an optional take it or leave it sort of thing. These are the people that will tell you, well, I only need it for phone calls, or I don't, you know, really care too much about it.
Right.
And I've noticed, my big rant is that neither group tends to understand or appreciate each other. There seems to be sort of this the camp that uses their phone as a tool to look at those that say, oh, it's not all that useful, very dismissively, kind of like, well, you just don't know how to use your phone, and that's why you think that way. And then the group that view their phone more as an optional thing, they look at those that are using it and go, well, they're just obsessed with their phone, they're always on it, et cetera, et cetera. So my big rant, really, and you can tell me if I'm off on this, is that some people use their phone for their lives to connect things and keep things running smoothly. Other people, their phone is just an optional accessory. And neither way is the right way. So stop complaining about each other.
Sorry. I hope my microphone didn't burst that sound at you.
No, it did not.
First, I agree with you. I agree with your categorization. I might add in a 1% group that are fanatics for a specific phone. And it's not just that smartphones are necessary. This particular smartphone.
Would this be a particular smartphone that we both think is not going to be able to keep that 1% for much longer?
Yeah, I think so. But we won't insult them because a lot of them are our friends, our close friends.
Yeah, there probably are 1% for the other platforms as well.
Absolutely.
There are probably people out there that vehemently think that the iPhone is the only decent phone on the market, and others that vehemently think that Android is the only decent phone on the market.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I get your drift about that 1% that you and I both, you know, they are friends.
Well, I have to say my daughter's one of those, you know. So when it was time to upgrade her phone, boy, what was it? I guess to the 7. Yeah, to the 7 last year. I asked her, I said to her, you know, you're probably going to be traveling out of country a bit. Would you like to change to an Android phone, and I'll put you on my Google Fi account, and roaming will become way cheaper and way simpler, to the countries you're going to. And she said, and she actually had to try an Android phone when she, as some of our listeners might remember, she lost her phone in the window of the Grand Hyatt in San Francisco. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Where it still remains, although we couldn't see it when we visited there a couple weeks ago. So her iPhone, what is it? I don't know, 5, whatever it was, is 4S. It's pretty old. Her 4S is still in the window there somewhere. We replaced it with a 6. But in any case, she said, no, I've tried that. So we got her a burner phone until I could find her a new phone, the iPhone 6. Because as you might recall, iPhone 6s were in short supply back then. It was hard to get. And she hated Android. She says, no. Please don't make me use an Android phone again. So having had some experience, she just doesn't like it. And she wanted another iPhone. So I said, okay, that's fine. I can understand that.
You're just lucky with her hatred of, you know, the burner phone. It wasn't also when she picked up her love of drug dealing or something like that. You know? I really don't like this phone, but I like the extra business income I now have.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe it was because it was a burner Android. It was, you know, not a great Android phone. It was an Android phone with like a lowercase a.
I will say, though, the Huawei little burner phone that I have over here from whatever, Freedom Pop, it gets the job done. I could, if I had to, I could probably use it. I wouldn't be happy about it, but I probably could. So yeah. Even little burner Android phones are not that bad.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting, you know, but it's like that for a lot of things, right? It's like Windows versus Mac OS versus Linux. And by the way, you know, although you are not a pure Linux user, I know you're more than comfortable with it. But, you know, with that beard thing going on, you look like a...
I know. When I read Debian forums and I talk about server administration, I feel right at home with it. So, yeah, the beard does help. It does give you massive geek cred.
Yeah.
You know, fresh shaven, you can only administer a Windows network. If you have a beard, you could do it all.
That's right. That's right. Even Mac OS, which you also do, Mac OS Server.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah, so
that's why I don't do Mac OS Server, and I haven't done Linux admin in years because, you know, I don't have a beard, so no credit.
No, but, you know, you can pull off the grizzled veteran look. So,
there you go. There you go.
You know, that's the benefit. You shave off the beard at about age 45 or so, and then you can be grizzled veteran.
Grizzled. Yeah, as you start graying and, yeah. Got it. Yeah.
Or you're like me. I have gray and white hairs in my beard, so people just don't know how old I am. So that's
all right. So let me ask you a question then. I think this one's kind of obvious, but watching videos as in movies, not so much YouTube.
iPad Pro.
Yeah, me too.
Much more comfortable to do that, including even movies. Although I don't, you know, unless I'm watching a movie with someone else. If I'm watching with someone else. You then we'll watch it on the big TV and all that. But if it's just me, I'll grab the iPad Pro and go usually lay in bed and watch a movie.
Yeah. You know, and one advantage to it, I mean, it's not that you can't do it on a big screen, but the Amazon Prime movies with its X-ray feature, so you can check on characters and actors and other kinds of details of the movie while the movie's playing. I don't use it a lot, but every now and then it's like, well, who is this actor? Where have I seen him and her or her before? It's kind of handy, and it's probably easier to do it on an iPad than if you're projecting it to a larger, not projecting, but throwing it to a larger screen from an iPad, for example, and, you know, you got to go find your iPad and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah. And I guess if I'm going to go watch a video or, you know, video slash movie with somebody, it's generally at the movie theater. You know, get the family out. So, you know, that's kind of the ultimate viewing experience these days. And, you know, my one rant about movie theaters is that the vast majority of them have no idea how to run a concession stand.
I'll agree with that.
You know, and again, this is, I don't know if it's not really a tech problem, but it is a problem that is easily solved. Most of the thing that bothers me is, you know, that the concession is their source of profit. Showing movie tickets are not, you know, a minimal source of profit. The profit are those $8 bags of popcorn that you buy, and $5, you know, soda or whatever. And yet they do it so inefficiently that many people don't, you know, just drop out of line because it's so slow. You know, and also many people don't plan ahead of time because. I know I went to go see my family and I went to go see the new Spider-Man Homecoming movie on opening weekend. And I don't know how many people came in late, like after the trailers started showing, you know, or in some cases while the movie was just beginning. So it's like, you know, they didn't plan this right. And there were no huge lines outside, though, so that's not the problem. Anyway, that's my rant. Movie theaters in general, get your concession act together. It's really simple to solve. Here's how you do it. One line, multiple people behind multiple counters, and separate runners. Do not make your cashiers be runners. It is inefficient, especially when you've got hundreds of people waiting in line. You're just losing money. You're reducing your profits by running it that way. And they have the people. They just do it inefficiently.
Okay, so my rant was trying to bring people together so that they wouldn't argue so much about what the right or wrong way was to use technology. And Todd's rant is, I want my popcorn a lot faster.
Well, I want to bring people together, too. I want them together in a single concession line. Going to multiple cashiers and separate runners. We're talking big theaters here.
I feel your pain. I've seen the same thing. I will say, though, at the movie theater that I go to, because it's lower volume, you buy your tickets at the concession stand. That is actually a pretty good idea, because you go in, you walk up, and even if you weren't going to go to the concession stand, you have to go to the concession stand to get your ticket.
So you might buy something.
While you're there, it's just, okay, two tickets, and then I guess some popcorn and a drink. And
$50 later, the two of you
have $55.95, and okay, I'm good. So,
All right. I should mention, again, not a technical thing, but one of my favorite physical brick-and-mortar stores, Costco, after decades and decades of being in operation, you know, they're famous for their $1.50 hot dog and soda combo. Mm-hmm. Which I think has not changed in price since day one, but the problem is because it's $1.50, people buy it a lot. You know, it's a really cheap meal, and you can argue whether it's healthy and it's not. But you know, it's cheap. There you go. So people buy it. After decades and decades, last year they changed their concession stands to, oh my gosh, yes, a single line with multiple cashiers. They still don't have the multi, and they kind of have separate runners, but not exactly. Your cashiers still have to build stuff. So they haven't totally gotten it, but they're close.
For those of you that think that it's not healthy, I think you should try my Costco hot dog and soda diet.
Oh.
So here's what you do.
Okay.
In the morning, you go to Costco, you get a soda and a hot dog for breakfast. And then for lunch, you go back, you get a soda and a hot dog.
Okay.
And then for dinner, you go back and you get a soda and a hot dog.
Okay.
If that's all you eat all day.
Yeah.
You'll lose weight.
Have you actually tried this?
No, but just doing the calorie numbers.
Just the calorie count?
Especially if it's diet soda. A hot dog is around 150 calories. You add the bun, you're a little over 200. So if you do three hot dogs and buns a day, you're at like 800 calories. Diet soda, you'll lose weight.
So I am not a health professional. I am not a nutritionist, a dietitian of any kind. But I think I read somewhere, like on CNN or something recently, that they're saying that the artificial sweeteners are not good for you if you're trying to lose weight. You should actually go to sugar. But that might be the sugar council putting out that news. But it's something to consider.
Well, you have to remember that the reason why they say they're not good is because you don't feel hungry or you don't feel full afterward.
Yeah.
I'm just looking up. There are actually 560 calories in one hot dog serving at Costco. So, you know what? Skip breakfast. You just lunch and dinner because it really is just about how much you're putting in. So if you're a low willpower kind of person, John's hot dog and soda diet is not for you.
Okay.
But if you've got the willpower to follow something and you see this as a massive simplification of your life, then definitely John's hot dog and soda diet, where you eat one hot dog and a diet cola twice a day, you'll be fine. You'll be losing weight in no time.
All right. And with that, we'll bring the mobile nutrition podcast to an end for this week. Remember, neither John nor I are health professionals or dietitians or
not in any way. If you do this and die, we are not responsible.
That's right. We are not recommending any diet of any kind.
Even if you do this and you don't die, but you just feel slightly upset mentally or physically, not our problem.
Yeah. And maybe you should watch the movie Supersize Me before you attempt any of this. But in any case, let's see if I can splice this guy together, and we'll see what my new Blue Yeti microphone sounds like when I listen back on a pair of headphones. Alrighty, talk to you guys later.